Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Ballard Radio. My name is Matt Weston, and tonight I'm joined by the biggest, fattest, drunkest one of them all, BFG. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, it's great to be back. It's that magical time of year when we as Texans fans can already start thinking about the next draft.
The draft where they have a third-round pick, and that's it. A lot of compensatory picks also, don't forget about that.
Yeah, that's going to be real exciting.
Yeah, I love that tweet that Seth Payne had. So we'll still relying to this as they can get the first pick in the third round of the draft.
Yep. To start the rebuilding process.
Well, let's start with our biggest fears coming true. Tom Savage is really bad. I know you and I talked about this in, like, March and April. I wrote about it in a Starbucks Safeway last week in my – put up that season preview where I actually went back and watched, you know, the video on him. And watching that since I last year was a really hellacious stuff to do, especially after watching Colt's video, which was probably, you know, just as bad. But a lot of us saw this coming, you and I included. He went 7-for-13 for 62 yards. He averaged 4.8 yards an attempt. He times lost 33 yards on the sacks and had a QBR 7.8. But Pro Football Focus had him with like a 68.3 rating. So let's be talking about most about the protection whenever it comes to Savage's numbers. It was bad, of course, too. But who do you put more of the blame on, Savage or the offensive line this game?
It's got to be on both. It really does. Because what we saw, there's a lot of defense of Savage happening on Twitter, by the way. And I would like to, at some point, we'll kind of talk about some of the things being said. But a lot of people saying, oh, he had, you know, those numbers really don't count because he had a couple of drops. The fact is that, yes, as bad as the offensive line was, you exacerbate that problem by having a guy who does not get rid of the ball quickly. So these two things are related, I think, in a lot of ways. You can't really separate the play of the offensive line versus the play of your quarterback when it comes to, you know, getting rid of the ball. If you want to assign any blame to this problem whatsoever, it's understanding that Tom Savage – cannot make quick reads and to put in a playbook that allows him to get rid of the ball quickly. You should have known going into this game, if you're Bill O'Brien, that you were going to have a really difficult time stopping the defensive front seven for Jacksonville. So if I kind of look back at it, it's the game planning, the offensive line, Tom Savage's, you know, he holds on to the ball too long. And the fact is, this is the exact same Tom Savage we've seen for the Texans since he's been a Houston Texan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I think it's a great point, especially, you know, the game plan with Savage, and it is both. You know, it's, you can say it's 50-50, 60-40 or whatever, but you have to, I mean, they know who Tom Savage is. This is his fourth year of the team. He's 27 years old. They drafted him. They've spent all his time in practice with him. They know that his strengths are that he has a good arm. He has some pretty okay accuracy. He's just really inconsistent with it, and he's really big. And, like, you know, the bad is just about everything else with him. And so going this game where you're going against one of the best interior pass rushing duos in the league, and Calais Campbell and Malik Jackson, one of the best cornerback duos on the outside, and A.J. Boye and Jalen Ramsey, you have to understand that it's going to be hard for him. You know, with this game, you have to run the ball a lot, throw a lot of quick passes, and those sorts of things. And they didn't really do it. I think a really important thing is also, like you said, just like everything's interconnected, you know, with the offense, where because your quarterback is good at this, run out a game plan that fits this, because your, you know, your offensive line's good at this. And we talk about it, you know, playing time, especially last year, Lamar Miller. And it's no different in Savage in this game. And so, yeah, you know, like the offensive line is bad, but a lot of it's also Savage, where he was doing the same thing he did last year. He takes a snap. He sits on one read. If it's not open, he sits there and waits until he gets open. He can't create anything from nothing. He can't scramble. He doesn't know how to step up in the pocket. He doesn't know how to, you know, maneuver around. He doesn't feel pressure from the backside. And so it's just a perfect combination to have a game like they have, where they were sacked 10 times. Savage was, you know, 6-for-13, like, you know, he said. And it was just a complete disaster.
Yeah, it was really, you know, it was really nice seeing Tom Savage do such a dead-on impression of a Robert E. Lee statue. You know, he didn't move at all, and he lost. So that's kind of the comparison I wanted to make there.
Yeah, I found this really funny gig from that Cincinnati game from last year where he takes a snap and he stands there for 7 seconds and just stands there. And then all of a sudden, somebody, you know, beats Chris Clark off the edge, and then he takes off towards the sideline, throws the ball out of bounds. And so you have to move around, create some sort of throwing lanes, manipulate your eyes, some to get people open, and he just can't do that. And I think it all kind of comes down to the fact that Tom Savage isn't a good quarterback. He's a fourth-round pick. You know, like I said, he's 27 years old. He's had plenty of opportunities to start. He's been passed on every single time. I think that he was going to be good this year, was very silly. And like, I think like maybe he could be below average on a team like Oakland with a great offensive line and great skill players. Like, I think he would have been good for like the 2015 Texans when the offensive line was extraordinary that year. But this team without Dwayne Brown, with Kendall Lamb, Jock Amini, Chris Clark on the outside, with Jeff Allen at right guard, Sufi and his pass blocking struggles at left guard. I think Martin's a really good pass blocker. He has no shot at all to play in this offense and have any sort of success. And even if he had that, he made what scrape, below average, maybe the 25th best quarterback. So I don't think there's a whole lot to gain from having him out there, anyways.
No, and there never was. And that's a big part of the problem is that it has fans. We have seen this. We have seen Tom Savage. We saw him in the preseason this year when he couldn't do anything against the first team defenses that he faced. It wasn't until the twos and threes started coming in that Tom Savage would actually do something. And how are we the only ones who are seeing this? How are we the only ones seeing that against the Panthers, the offensive line's getting eaten alive, Savage is holding onto the ball too long and can't do jack. The twos and threes come in, and hey, Tom Savage is a world beater. How is the coaching staff not seeing this and saying, you know what, maybe there's a problem here? So it goes back to, you have this shiny new toy in Deshaun Watson. He's a very shiny, fun-looking toy. He can do things that other toys can't do on your team. And you give him second-team reps. I mean, we have to get past this Bill O'Brien macho, the rook's got to earn the PT kind of thing, because I think that's what it is. This is that kind of that old-school Bill O'Brien, we're going to do things the way they were done in 1965, and I'll be damned if I'm going to change. And so I kind of get that feel from Bill O'Brien with how he's handling Deshaun Watson. I'm getting weird feedback from you, by the way.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah, I think anything's better. That was really weird. I think that's what Bill O'Brien's mindset was, is he's got to earn it. Rook's got to earn it. Well, how do you earn it with the second freaking team? How do you earn it with a bunch of guys you're not going to be really playing with? The whole thing was stupid. From the day he was drafted, Bill O'Brien said, that's our dude. He's getting the first team reps. We're going to go to war with the guy who we think we can, can lead us the best. And instead, we screwed around with Tom Savage the complete offseason. This, once again, goes back to Bill O'Brien not understanding the talent on his team, especially at the quarterback position. This has been a leitmotif for 3 years now on this podcast. Bill O'Brien is not an offensive super genius. He's not a quarterback genius. I don't think the dude is even a college-level head coach. He is not good at what he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess one other thing about Savage too, and we'll get to Bill O'Brien a little bit more in a second, was like you mentioned that he took all the reps to the first team. And that was one of the arguments for quarterback that I read on that thing called the internet that we're all connected to, like a giant umbilical cord. And it was that, hey, Savage has never had first team reps. Get him in there at the offense every play. Get him gelling DeAndre Hopkins. Good things are going to happen. And so in this game, did you see anything differently from what you saw, last year with him? Did all those first team reps, bring anything to the table?
No, what I still see is a guy who refuses to push the ball downfield. I think that's first and foremost. Is everybody was talking about his world beater stats because he had like a 75% completion rate in the preseason. Great! He was still getting 4.5, 5 yards of pass, an attempt. You have to push the ball. If you're not getting at least 6.7 yards per attempt as a quarterback in today's NFL, you are de facto below average.
Yeah.
That has to be a thing. And Tom Savage cannot do that thing. And that's just one thing out of many. This is the same problem with Brock Osweiler last year. Great, he can have a game where he throws 67%, 70% completion rate with a touchdown, but he's like getting 5 yards a pass. That's still not acceptable levels of production from your quarterback position. This is a really big deal. When you look at the history of the quarterback position in the modern era, that if you look at that, every good quarterback, at least 6.7 yards per attempt. Tom Savage can't do that. Brock Osweiler couldn't do that. That's not Ryan Fitzpatrick's thing. That's not Brian Hoyer's thing. So every quarterback we're trying to do we're trying to convert into the Bill O'Brien quarterback savior veteran version does not fit the system. Does not fit a system that can do that. And so once again, you point back to, you got quarterbacks who can't learn the system, because evidently the learning curve of the system is 4 years, and they can't do the thing. So this is the Tom Savage we've seen. Doesn't push the ball downfield, slow to make decisions, erratic accuracy. And I hate to be so mean, but the dude just does not process the game at a very high level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also when he was drafted too, he was 23, 24 years old. So it's not like you're getting a guy who is younger at the higher ceiling, and it's like he also bounced around a lot of different schools too. And I'll never forget when he was drafted, because I was like, well, they took a guy, we're never going to see him play at all. I really don't care. They should take a quarterback in the second round at least. I can't believe Ryan Fitzpatrick is the starting quarterback. And then here we are, 3 years later, and Savage did a lot more than that. He started more than one game. He was named the star this year, and that's already been quickly rescinded. I think bringing up a great point, too, about his downfield accuracy or downfield attempts is that he has this great arm. He can't throw the ball downfield because he has no accuracy downfield. And it's not like Ryan Mallett, too, where – he puts the ball over the wrong shoulder. He doesn't even give his guys a chance to go up and get it. And the whole thing is just very frustrating. So going back to Bill O'Brien in this game, that teams are up in the first half, and he pulls Tom Savage and he starts Deshaun Watson. So are you excited to relive the 2015 season all over again with this? Will he or won't he start Ryan Mallett or Brian Hoyer version now with Savage and Deshaun Watson?
Golly, it's once again, Bill O'Brien drama queen, right? There always has to be some level of drama. Next, we're going to hear that O'Brien had Tom Savage up against the wall and was yelling at him, why couldn't you be more like Brock Osweiler? There's always this drama around Bill O'Brien. And it was really funny with his pressers last couple of days, how kind of nonchalant, detached he's been during the pressers. It's like he's died on the inside. And so that's been kind of the entertaining part for me. It's just like, has Bill O'Brien given up? Does he just realize his system is crap? Anyway, to answer your question more directly, no, I'm not looking forward to this. It's trash. It's immature. It shows poor professionalism. It shows a lack of making a judgment call. It shows a lack of understanding of the talent on your roster. Let's just look at it one way. Let's be very myopic for a very short moment. You have an offensive line that is a veritable sieve. You have two quarterbacks with very different skill sets. You've got one guy who can do the play action, he can get rid of the ball quickly, or you've got the slow-footed, slow-witted, tall guy with the big arm. Which quarterback, based upon your offensive line's ability alone, is the better decision to start? So that's why this shouldn't even be a game. Bill O'Brien should have gone up there, stripped all of his clothes down to his undies, and said, Emperor's clothes are off, Deshaun Watson starting. Instead, no. Instead, we get this wavering, maybe-ish, not even a real announcement, but hey, it's going to be Deshaun Watson because I just saw Ian Rappaport reported on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, if you didn't know, Deshaun Watson's been named the starting quarterback today. I think we both are on the same page that Watson should be the quarterback. And especially with this offensive line, I think that we're still going to see Tom Savage start games this year. I don't think it's going to be all Watson all the time. I think we're going to see kind of, we saw Hoyer's, like when Hoyer started and then, Mallett started and then eventually Hoyer took over the job. I think we're going to see something similar this year too. And a lot of it depends on the team. And so, I mean, I think for sure Watson has to start just because the Bengals have a good front four. You know, Geno, it's like you, if you were to rank the three players, you would say Calais Campbell, then Geno Atkins, and then Malik Jackson. So, like, with a team with a good front four pass rush, you have to start Watson because he can at least manipulate the pocket, get out of there, run for some yards. I do think some movement Savage can't. Maybe against New England they start Tom Savage instead because New England has a really bad pass rush, and maybe, you know, Savage can have more time and be able to, you know, use his arm more and whatever. But I think we're going to see a lot of bouncing around between the two quarterbacks. And what do you think?
Unfortunately, I think you're probably right. This is that indecision. If you're a head coach, if you're a leader of any sort of a team, even if it's just at your corporate America job, what your staff is looking for is they're looking for consistency in your decisions. They're looking for you to admit when you're wrong, move on, but not go back and forth the entire time. So all this gamesmanship with who's going to start creates more problems for the entire roster up and down on the offensive side. It's not good for the team. It's just not. But and just for that reason alone, I do see Bill O'Brien continuing to do that throughout the year, is going with a quote-unquote hot hand at quarterback, which is just as stupid as it sounds.
Mm-hmm. And so with Watson, I mean, like Savage, he did have, you know, good stats. I thought Watson, you know, I didn't think he played very well at all, but like he still moved around the pocket. He made some rookie mistakes. I think one of the things that we really saw was kind of with that. I did my film room article on him. Was just reading only half the field and missing linebackers, dropping back in coverage and throwing at them. You know, Savage has done the same thing too, but I think Watson, I did that a few times in that Jacksonville game. But he went 12 of 23 for 102 yards, averaged 4.4 yards an attempt. And like you mentioned about the yards attempt, it's like every Texans quarterback just hovers around 4.4. Sometimes Jordan Poole to Osweiler, but like he met 5 yards an attempt threat. With Watson and his arm strength, it may be stuck around there. He threw one touchdown, one interception, was sacked 4 times, lost 21 yards. Had QBR 42.7, which is 6 times Tom Savage's. And he had a fumble kicked out of his hands, which I think was good karma for Jacksonville after all the kick pixes, you know, Bortles threw. Everybody was upset about, you know, a fumble being kicked out of his hands. But you know, Jacksonville deserved a break after all the Bortles kick pixes. So, were you impressed all this first half? Like, what did you take away from Watson's performance in the second half?
I will say I was impressed with how he handled himself. Clearly, the dude has a lot of work. I mean, I'm not sitting here saying that Deshaun Watson is clearly a much better quarterback than Tom Savage, because that would be a lie. Okay, he's not. But the difference is number one, you've made an incredible investment in drafting Deshaun Watson. And number two, we know what Tom Savage is going to do, and that's mediocrity forever, if that. So at least give him a chance to start. If you want to pick out one thing that really impressed me, Deshaun Watson's sleight of hand is really freaking outstanding. I mean,
yeah.
If you could put together Deshaun, and I've said this already, Deshaun Watson's sleight of hand, his ability to run play action, his ability to hide the ball, along with Gary Kubiak's play action scheme, you would have a deadly combination. It would just be so much fun to watch. Even today, like the first game, it would have been fun to watch. And you damn well know Gary Kubiak wouldn't have started Tom Savage, too. So I would love to see that. I would love to see that kind of more play action incorporated. That's how we scored the touchdown. But Watson's hands are so quick and so smooth. That stands out. As far as the rest of it, nothing was a surprise. He's going to have trouble with accuracy issues. He was just stepping in with the team. He didn't get a whole lot of reps with the ones. So it's things to expect. And let's give credit where it's due, is that the Jacksonville defense was really playing some good ball on Sunday.
Yeah.
And Calais Campbell, Malik Jackson, Miles Jack, the concussionator, Jalen Ramsey, A.J. Boye, even with the 3 penalties, that is a really freaking talented defense.
Yeah, it really is. I want to talk about them, too, after we're done talking about Watson. There's a stat from Pro Football Focus. I don't know if you follow Vinny Ronka on Twitter. It's PFF_Vinny. He posts a lot of text and stuff, and I've gotten some numbers from him, you know, directly for PFF for some articles I've done. But he said that Deshaun Watson posted a 131.3 passer rating versus the Jaguars on play-action passes. Without it, his passer rating dropped to 32.6. I think that's a great point that you're making where like if he's running the play action pass, if he's getting on the move, he's doing rollouts and those sorts of things, he can probably be confident, capable of doing some things. And so this is really like the biggest point that I have, my biggest thought about Watson, this offense, that sort of thing. And it all kind of ties together with Bill O'Brien and what they decided to do this summer. So, like, that quarterback battle really never seemed like one to begin with. You kind of, like, the first 2 weeks, you kind of heard those rumblings that you kind of saw Russell Wilson, or he took over for Matt Flynn, beat him out. Was that, he's a great leader. Everybody loves him. He's, learning so quick. He does so many things well. And we heard that right away. And then that really kind of simmered and stopped. And then it turned into, Tom Savage, their quarterback. 3 weeks in the preseason, that was it. But the problem with that is that, let's say like they, they keep the battle open, they kind of have two offenses going on. You're able to kind of already create an offense around Watson if you have a battle and if he's named the starter, heading into the season or after that third preseason game compared to now, where you're kind of having to rush together in a short week like this. And so what did we see in 2013 with RG3 in Washington and Russell Wilson in Seattle? You saw two offensive coordinators in Kyle Shanahan and Daryl Bevel who created offense around their rookie quarterbacks where they, ran that quarterback read or they ran the zone read. They created a lot of open passes for them. They ran a lot of play-action passes. They got them out in space, let them use their athleticism and those sorts of things. And Houston could have done the same thing with Watson, where they could have created offense for him to enter the year, gave him throws that he's capable of or confident to make, get him on the move, let him do things that he's – and he already come into the season with that sort of, offense set up for him. And so now instead they're having to scramble together. Now he's a starter. Now he's playing this really bad offensive line. Now they're having to kind of cray and throw this entire thing together. Situation in a position to succeed immediately. And I think that's really detrimental. There's a huge opportunity cost that they did with Savage. I think it's also going to hurt Watson's development maybe. I think it's going to hurt maybe his confidence too if they're trying to run the same like really complicated, quick pass. You don't have to know what every single receiver is doing, every audible is doing offense. And I think it's just a really big, not necessarily just this offense so much in Watson specifically that they couldn't create an offense, specifically for him, like other quarterback coaches and offensive coordinators have done before in the past and made the playoffs with immediately.
Yeah, and this isn't rocket science. I mean, Bill O'Brien has turned this offensive scheme into pure rocket science. Sage Rosenfeld, love him, wrote a great little article about how Tom Savage has got to be the guy to start because Bill's scheme is so complicated. This is Savage's fourth year in the league. It's going to take 4 years to learn an offensive scheme? Look, if it takes 4 years to learn an offensive scheme, for your quarterback to learn your scheme, you're doing it wrong. Okay, there's just no question here. So how difficult – all you have to do is you look at the Kyle Shanahan, the Sean McVay, the Gary Kubiak, for crikey's sake, who can take a mobile, mediocre-armed, but semi-athletic quarterback and do great, outstanding things with them. Look what Kyle Shanahan did with Matt Ryan last year. So there are offensive schemes that easily could have been written up to match Deshaun Watson's skill set from day one, but instead it's in another case of Bill O'Brien taking a square peg and trying to shove it into the round hole, and it's just been a complete fail.
Yeah. I had a really off-color joke that I won't make, but –
What, I know, I almost did.
I don't know what to say now. I completely agree. And also, I think one of the things, too, is what do you see with great coaches is that no great coaches have a scheme or a system or anything like that. They have players that they have. They know what they do well, and then they build their offense from that, and they hide their weaknesses with the scheme that they do. And you see it all the time in every sport out there, every league, in every team that has success. And like we haven't seen that at all with O'Brien this entire time. He's had this complicated scheme. He's picked all these quarterbacks that have been bad and they've all been bad. And I really do think this team they've gone 9-7 with him the last 3 years, but I think they scraped the bare minimum out of this roster and the talent they've had. And it's been a talented team since 2008. It's not like he came into a team that was completely empty like San Francisco this year or Cleveland or anything like that. It's been a talented roster this entire time. I think he really did scrape the bare minimum of it. And I think, like, this Watson thing is just another huge mistake in a long series of them that he's had during his coaching tenure.
Yep, agreed.
Yeah, and also want to say, too, it's not like, you know, I know you mentioned earlier, it's not like this is anything new. We've been harsh on O'Brien, you know, the last 3 years he's been the coach here. It's not anything new. It's not like we're overreacting just 1 week, because it has been 1 week. The season's not over, of course. But it's just been, you know, 3 years worth of, you know, the same sort of thing that we've seen happen. There are so many different things you can point to as other arguments for, you know, the problems he's had as a head coach, too.
I've said so much about Bill O'Brien already on the show. It's just, he does not do the things a good coach does. That we are, again, that we are 9-7 the last 3 years is more of a narrative on the roster that Gary Kubiak put together for him before he came on board than it is about what Bill O'Brien does. And all you have to do right now is look at the state of the roster and see that the offensive line is a nightmare, half the secondary is a nightmare, wide receivers suck, tight ends suck, to see how much different the roster is today than it was just a few years ago. And that's on Bill O'Brien and Rick Smith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was never on the fire Rick Smith bandwagon at all. But after the Osweiler trade, I'm starting to lean more towards that way that he's built a team that's been hit on first round picks. He's had some good drafts, but there's just been so many like just big mistakes he's made, but that's a different discussion. So let's talk about something else that's bad, and that's the offensive line. It was really bad. This is expected on Dwayne Brown when they start Kendall Lamb. Now, I don't know when this happened or why it happened. Like, people were excited for Kendall Lamb to start offensive tackle because he's been an offensive tackle his entire career. Last year, he gave up 3 sacks in 166 snaps while primarily being used as a 6th offensive tackle. And it's incredibly difficult to give up three sacks in that little snaps. So I don't know why anybody was excited for him. They started Bro Giacomini at right tackle. I don't know why I'm excited for him. He's strong, but he's slow-footed, and he creates a lot of penalties. And then again, Sufia at left guard, Martin at center, and Allen on right at right guard. Of these 5 offensive linemen, who was the most egregious on Sunday?
I think it's a tie between Kendall Lamb and Jeff Allen. As proud as Giacomini was, Kendall Lamb is an outstanding blocking tight end. He's not a tackle. Jeff Allen deserves to not just be on the roster. Once again, this is another bad decision. You know, whomever is responsible for this, Rick Smith or Bill O'Brien, we've talked about it ad nauseum on the show. Brandon Brooks for Jeff Allen is one of the worst trades, quote unquote trades, this team has ever made. It's been a disaster. So, you know, when you look at the starting player, so Philo was the 33rd pick in 2014. We're starting trash. We did nothing to address the fact that Derek Newton probably doesn't play another NFL snap. This is just really incredibly poor roster decision making.
Yeah. I know whenever the Texans signed Vince Wilfork and he was bad, I said Vince Wilfork was worse than Ed Reed. That wasn't true. I mean, it was sure the first 5 weeks of that season when Vince Wilfork was like really out of shape and like falling over trying to rush the passer and they were playing him too much. But he ended up being, you know, a below average nose tackle. But Jeff Allen is worse than Ed Reed, not only on like his on field performance, but the opportunity cost too, that you went from having a top 10 guard to maybe like the 30th best guard in the league. And you also only saved 1 year and $1 million by signing Allen instead of Brandon Brooks. And so that was just a disaster. But the other thing that I saw was kind of funny too, it's like everybody just kind of realized that Jeff Allen's really bad. He was really bad last year. He's been really bad this year. He looks overweight. He has no physicality. He loses blocks. He can't deal with bull rushes against really good interior rushers. And so I'm going to say Allen was the worst of the 5. You know, Kendall Lamb had some awful blocks as well, too. He can't play left tackle. And I know that you mentioned him as a good blocking tight end. In those 6 offensive linemen sets they had last year, they ran this 4% of the time. Their DVOA was -69.2%, and they ran the ball 73% of the time. So it's like even whenever he's on the field, he's been a disaster. He was a disaster on Sunday. I never want to see him play. And so, how do you think this whole Dwayne Brown situation is going to play out? Should he be signed like yesterday, 2 weeks ago, tomorrow? Like, what do you think is going to happen with this whole thing?
I don't know. This is all right now. This is all about penis size measuring, right? This is all about measuring the penis to see who's got the bigger one. I'm trying not to cuss. That's as best as I can do, so forgive me. But this is all about, does Dwayne Brown have a bigger one than Rick Smith or vice versa? It's all about pride. And right now, Rick Smith looks like a freaking moron. So give the dude his extension yesterday. The fact that you haven't yet tells me that you just are, you're just, you know, pissing away the season, really.
Yeah.
So this team is the offensive line will improve with Dwayne Brown, but I don't think that Rick Smith wants to actually resolve it. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think if they don't resign Dwayne Brown soon, like, I'm not gonna say the season's over, you know, just because of one game, but with Cincinnati on Thursday, who is a talented team, no matter what happened that Baltimore game, or I believe they had 3 red zone turnovers. I watched that condensed version. It was kind of funny. And they played New England, and so it's possible you start 0-3. So, I mean, because of their schedule, I would have re-signed them immediately. I would have probably said them going the season because I know that they've only re-signed 2 players with 2 years left on their contract, and they always say they don't do it. And that was J.J. Watt and Andre Johnson. And Dwayne Brown's in this team's, you know, what, third best offensive player of all time. He's their best offensive player right now. He's so important to this offense that – I feel you pretty much had to. And even if it's like even offering him like a Andrew Whitworth sort of contract, you say, all right, here's 3 years, $10 million a year. Here's some guaranteed money. You know, we have to have you here. And like his loss, you can see it in so many ways, like especially in the run game. Like, him and Tua Field are great together. They understand each other well. They played together for the last 3 seasons. They run really good double teams. You know, Brown's able to really – they both really help each other out. And in the passing game – You can survive without one great tackle, because you can do things on the right side. Brown's not out there. You can chip, you can slide protection over there. You can keep it back on the right hand side. You can do a lot of different things. But whenever you have 2 tackles who are awful, there's nothing that you can really do. And so I think it's just so integral that, you know, Brown is on the field. And if he doesn't play, I don't see this offense, you know, ever getting better. I think it's gonna be a lot of games like how, especially whenever you play against teams with, you know, any sort of pass rush they can generate their front 4.
Yeah, and you really, really freaking nailed it on the head. Offensive line play is in large part about continuity. So with the turnover that we've had, unnecessary turnover that we've had, can't do anything about Derek Newton, but getting rid of Brandon Brooks, not getting Dwayne Brown's contract resolved, These are changes that have a real impact on offensive line play. You played offensive line. You know this. When you know what your guy next to you is going to do, when you read each other like a book, pre-snap, it makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know one thing that Jeff Schwartz, you know, says about offensive line play was the biggest thing about the continuity. I think it's about some podcasts before. Is that whenever you come to the line of scrimmage, you don't have to make any calls. You don't have to make any adjustments. You and the guys next to you, you just know what's going to happen. You know who's going to block who. You know how the pass protection is going to be, who's going to blitz and all that. And there's no need for adjustments or anything. You just know. And it also, like, a lot of it, too, is just, like, feeling, where you know when to come off the double team, how long to stay on, you know, how to turn the shoulders, what this guy's good at. If you need to stand longer because, you know, his feet are a little bit slower, or, you know, he's so strong that once he's there, you can leave immediately and those sorts of things. So I think that's the biggest thing with Brown to Fio is that the left side of their running game was the best part of this offensive line last year. And now the strength of it's completely gone without Brown. So now you're at a point where this offensive line does nothing well. And I don't think it's going to get better until Brown, you know, plays again. I know Jeff Allen's not going to start Thursday. That's going to help things out. I think Manx is really going to help out in pass protection and the run game too, because he can get to the second level and do some things. But it's not going to be anywhere close to capable you until Brown gets back.
No, not at all. I think you're right. You know, just even putting Manx out there, and he doesn't have the size. He doesn't have the strength, really, to be a guard in the NFL. But he is – anything's going to be better than Jeff Allen, who is just absolutely worthless out there.
Mm-hmm. And I guess this is kind of the really big thing, too, about last Sunday's game was last year the Texans finished 30th in offensive DVOA, and they need to improve on offense this year. Because of, like we talked about so much last year, like I wrote about multiple times, was that they won more games than was expected. I believe their expected win loss record or expected wins was 5.4 based on their point differential. They were 30th and 29th in DVOA. They still won 9 games. They were 8-2 one possession record. And so it's not to say that they're going to be automatically worse this year. It just says that they have to improve in order to stay the same, to in order to replicate last year's record. And the Hagee Bear offensively specifically, and they didn't. They pretty much kept the entire team together. The only thing they really did was draft Deshaun Watson and Dante Foreman, who had one carry for 4 yards on Sunday. They did things like re-sign Hopkins. Jay Proche played 0 offensive snaps on Sunday. They re-signed C.J. Fedorowicz, who's now an injury reserve with a concussion. So I guess this is like the really big thing where if you want to talk about the season being over or not, or if they're going to make the playoffs already, is that the Hagee Bear offensively, it seems like they could possibly even be worse offensively. So, like, how worried are you right now? And how bad do you think this offense can get? Do you think there's anything saving it? Are you worried at all about how the season's going to turn out already in week one? Are we headed towards 2013 all over again?
I think there's a potential. I think that if you're going to look at the Black Swan type event, I think it's possible. Because here's where Football Outsiders has them now. Mean wins of 6.2. And playoff chances of 14.2%. And let's put that in perspective, that 14.2%. That is like New Orleans. That is the Chicago Bears. These are teams that are going to go 6-10, 5-11. That's where they've got us as far as our chances to make the playoffs. It's the first game. There's a lot of football to be played. I get it. But when you look back at all the things that went right in 2016, all the one score of victories that the team had, just up and down, the defense playing lights out when the offense kept putting them in poor positions, that alone, that little factor alone is crazy. So this is – even losing this game against Jacksonville, I think, puts the season much closer to 6-10 than it does to 10-6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also both Minnesota and – I mean, both Chicago and New Orleans playing really good divisions. And the Houston plays in pretty much an up-for-grabs division, too. And the thing about the Texans also is they have the hardest schedule in this division, unlike Tennessee, Jacksonville, Indy, who all have really easy schedules, too. So, I don't know. Like, I mean, offensively, they get better. They haven't. And I don't think last year's results are replicated at all. And like, again, like, it's week one. That being said, it's week one. This team has dealt with this before. They've come back from really bad performances. And also, the defense last week wasn't good either. Now, they weren't awful or anything, but they – like, for Houston's not going to win any football games this year unless their defense is great. They had trouble stopping the run. They couldn't get any pressure on Bortles. Bortles had plenty of time to throw. It wasn't really any good at all. And so I guess I'm going to start off with the really bad part first, and that's the fact that J.J. Watt did not look like himself at all. It wasn't like he looked rusty. He looked athletically challenged. Like, that athleticism wasn't there. That's happened before. And the biggest thing I saw was that his burst off the line of scrimmage was, it wasn't like it was before. So, like, a lot of his pass rushes, he was matched up one-on-one with Jeremy Parnell. Jeremy Parnell is kind of like, maybe like Marcus Gilbert. He's kind of like Marcus Gilbert or kind of like Derek Newton, where he doesn't have the best feet, but he's really strong. And so if he gets his hands on you, it's hard to get away from, but his feet aren't that great. And Watt couldn't rip past the edge. He couldn't beat him to the edge. He couldn't rip around him. He couldn't bend and duck around that corner. And Parnell was meeting at the point of contact nearly every single dropback that he had. And that's what really scares me, is that this defense last year was based on its secondary. This year it's on its front seven. And you kind of pencil in J.J. Watt's feet great again after everything the beat reporters wrote and said. And if he's not great, it's going to be – even that much harder for this defense to beat, that much harder for them to win games. So what did you see from Watt this game? And also, can Houston's defense still be a top 10 unit if he's, a little bit above average rather than, great?
So I'll just start with J.J. Watt. And, I'll just say that that was the worst part of the game. I mean, I kind of went into the game having expectations that the offense was going to suck. So I was pretty level set there. But J.J. Watt looked a lot better in the preseason than he did. I feel like it, and I might be wrong.
Yeah.
But it looked like he was quicker during the preseason than what he was during the game on Sunday. That concerns me for a lot of reasons. Number one is I'd like to see the dude back, just because how can you not love? I mean, we should just rename Houston Watt at this point. So I want to see him healthy. I want to see him playing at an elite level again. And it was just kind of heartbreaking seeing that he could do nothing out there. I don't think he won a single one-on-one battle all game. And I think you explained it the best, is that he sure as heck wasn't beating Cam Robinson on the left side, and he couldn't do anything against Parnell on the left. If that is what J.J. Watt has turned into, then we need to focus on putting him back on the inside, where he can hopefully still has the first step quickness to beat guards and centers, instead of him swinging outside, especially on passing downs. That's what I would like to see, but that was just kind of heartbreaking. It really was.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's even, like you said, just like him, like, regardless of Texans winning or losing, just like watching J.J. Watt just be spectacular and one of the greatest defensive players of all time is what makes watching this football team every single Sunday since, what, 2011. It's been like the biggest joy, or that's too early, I guess I should say, since 2012. It's like the best thing about being a Texans fan watching this team every Sunday is just sitting there and just watching him play the entire game. And so I did what I'd done before in the past, where I just sit there and watch Watt every single play defensively. If I want to see anything else in defense, I can go back and rewatch the game. And there just really wasn't anything there. And come back from back surgery, and like just after everything he did, for Houston, raising all that money after the hurricane, and then him finally coming back this year, and for him to just like not look like himself too, because it's not like Jacksonville just outplayed him or out schemed him or anything. He just couldn't do anything. Like, he just wasn't his physically dominating self. And it's just, man, it's not only like bad for the team as far as their winning goes. It's just kind of it's really heartbreaking to see for a player that, has been so great and that, we like so much.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, let's say Watt's only slightly above average. Do you think Houston's defense can still be a top 10 one?
I think so. The other problem I saw, as depressing as Watt's performance was, and I'm not as, what's the word I'm really looking for? It's a Jewish word, and I'm completely missing it, which is just embarrassing right now. I'm not as completely worried or upset about the defense as I am about the offense, just, for the long term and generally speaking. But what really caught my eye on Sunday was that not only was J.J. Watt not winning any one-on-one battles, nobody was winning one-on-one battles.
Yeah,
we also did not do a lot, and it just seemed to me, and I was somewhat distracted during parts of the game, but it did not seem to me like we were doing some of the imaginative blitzing that we did last year, especially the A-gap stunts that we like to pull with our linebackers. I did see a couple of them, but not a lot. And so it looked like the game planning was much more conservative, which is odd when you're playing Blake Bortles, because you want to force him into errors. So the game planning looked conservative. We weren't winning one-on-one battles. It wasn't an imaginative game plan. I do think there's hope there. You damn well know Romeo Crennel is going to sit Mike Vrabel on his lap and say, Mike, we're going to do things differently this week. So I've got a lot of confidence that that's going to improve. Are we going to be top 10? I don't know. We certainly have the ability to be that. It's just really hard when you see that we lost A.J. Bouye. Brian Cushing's done as a football player. Cunningham coming in for him is an upgrade. Sorry for all the Brian Cushing fans. Cushing's done. DJ Reader's an upgrade over Vince Wilfork. But our safety play is going to be rough. So roughly talent-wise, we're about the same as 2016, but we seem to get really lucky in 2016. So regression is possible, definitely. I do think if you say top 10, I do think, yes, we are a top 10, but I'm thinking like 9, 10 – rather than two or three.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I know that was one of the things also that Seth Payne and at least James Ted Washington pointed on Twitter during the game, was that they felt that the defense was, too creative, like being too complex when it didn't need to be. They said they were running, it was like really, like they had players out of position, they weren't in the edge well, and they were making things more complicated than needed to be, especially whenever you're going against an offense that's just run the ball. They just ran a lot of power run plays, and on third down, Blake Bortles tried to throw for third down completions. And that's most of their offense. And so you don't need to have guys play off position. You don't need to blitz a lot. It's just pretty much just hit the gap, control double teams, open up run, open up lanes for your linebackers to make tackles in the backfield. And they didn't really do that. And so I really just like the idea, like you mentioned, of Romeo Crennel, Mike Vrabel sitting in Romeo Crennel's lap and him just showing him exactly how what they should do on defense. Last year a little bit too, where I wasn't like all the way in on Vrabel being the defensive coordinator instead of Crennel, because you can coach guys and technique and how to play the game is a lot different than running a defense and game plan, that sort of thing. And there's a learning curve there. And it seems like Vrabel already has needs some time to come into his own as a defensive coordinator. And thank God that Crennel is there to help out still too.
Yeah, and that's a big deal. You just can't overlook that fact that there is somebody to go talk to. I'm not worried about the defense. It'll come around. It might take a game or two. This wasn't a great debut, but I mean, really, who better to train you how to be a defensive coordinator than Romeo Crennel? Crennel maybe needs to get take out a restraining order on me or something with my love for him. I'm not even afraid to admit it. I love Romeo Crennel.
Yeah, me too. I love listening to him curse and that Hard Knocks. It's like he's too sweet to be cursing. And also, this entire conversation about him mentoring Vrabel, I've just been imagining him breastfeeding Mike Vrabel this entire time, and telling him
totally.
That he's such a big strong boy. You're so smart, Mike. I'll just need to learn a few things. You're such a big strong boy.
It's really sad, but true.
I think the defense would be good too. I don't think it'd be a top 10 unit unless Watt's great. Because the safety play is a question. Kevin Johnson kind of rough game coming back as well too. And so I think the front seven has to be completely dominant. It wasn't dominant this game. I think Watt's a big part of that. So that's my concern with defense is that I think Watt has to be great for this defense to be like a top 10 unit. If they make the playoffs, they have to be at least a top 10 unit. So that's my concern. But I think it still should be pretty good. And it should be a good game this week for him too. But before we preview this game and get to these viewer questions, listener questions, I should say, is that the special teams, there's actually touchbacks. How happy are you that Nick Novak's baby leg is out of here?
You can't talk enough about that. I mean, Nick Novak, what was he? Oh, jeez. Sorry. Lots of numbers today. Had a busy day with work too. But Nick Novak was such a net negative on the kicking game. And as fun as it was to watch him barely make 47-yard field goals, he was killing us on kickoffs. And so just the mere fact that Fairbairn is able to get the ball into the end zone is a really big freaking deal. So from that standpoint. So when you look at, when you look at our first drop of DVOA rankings, we don't suck. I think we're 11th. In
Spain. Oh, hell yeah, baby.
So, I mean, look at that. That's man, we're shooting up the top of the list. Tyler Irvin wasn't Tyler Scissorhands and returning punts. If you want to look at the bright spots for the team, Tyler Irvin and Kaimi Fairbairn, because it was not like watching, oh, my God, Nick Novak kills me dead. I'm breaking here. The discussion about it last year when they re-signed Leckler and re-signed Nick Novak, and everybody was so excited to re-sign those two, even though we have the worst special teams, and it was all about, it's about the coverage. No, it's not all about coverage. There are things in place here. Football 101. Sorry, I'm done.
Yeah, and I mean, it's even let's say the coverage is an example. It's a small part of it because the biggest direct attribute to your special teams is your kickers. And Leckler has been the punter for the last 3 years. The team has been awful on all their punt rankings the last 3 years. And so it doesn't necessarily matter. And I mean, there's been arguments people try to go me into online or said, well, look, he ranks this in hang time. He ranks this in yards per punt. So I'm not doing it. I'm not going to spend 30 minutes of my life arguing with somebody over the merits of Shane Leckler being good or not because he's bad. And Nick Novak was bad last year, and it's so great they're not there. And so DVOA, just to bring it up before we preview the Bengals game, they're offensively negative 40.1%, which is 28th, about the same as they were last year, finishing 28th. Defensively, 15.1%, which is 22nd. And special teams, 2.3%, which is 11th, which is just so spectacular. And also the last Last was the Colts at -119.2% after their slaughtering at the hands of the Los Angeles Rams.
Los Angeles Rams. Oh, now I'm all confused.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Las Vegas Raiders. Los Angeles, okay.
And Los Angeles Chargers, too.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So stupid.
I think you stop changing things, you know. But so this week, Houston's playing Cincinnati on the road on Thursday Night Football. Now, week three, they're playing New England. Is this game a must-win on Thursday?
Oh, yes. This game is absolutely, absolutely must-win on Thursday. If we do not win this game, then I think it's more than feasible that the Texans could – it's not just going to be that we're going to be digging out of a hole. It's going to be how deep that hole is. Because if you look at the next few games, Patriots – at Patriots, that's just an LOL game, okay? The next game is the Titans at home, Chiefs, who steamrolled the Patriots and are a very talented team, and the Browns. You look at that, and the only one you look at and say, hey, we can win that game easily is maybe the Browns. But the Browns played pretty darn well against the Steelers, and DeShone Kizer looked, like, confident, you know?
Yeah, so, he was pretty sexy that game.
Yeah, he was pretty sexy. And then it goes at Seahawks. Colt, the Rams are no longer pushovers. Look what a coaching change does. This roster, this schedule is not easy. Just look at our away games at Ravens, at Titans, at Jaguars, at Colts, at Seahawks. There's no gimmies on the schedule.
Yeah, it is a tough schedule. The one thing I want to say about Kizer, too, it's like I love his arm slot and his throwing motion and his pocket presence. And again, it's like if he ever kind of gets his accuracy down a little bit better, he's going to be like a really good quarterback in this league. And that was kind of all right there to see. But anyways, yeah, I do believe this is a must win. There's that stat that only 12% of teams who start off 0-2 make the playoffs. And Houston's not going to win in New England. They're going to get their tits lit like they do every single year they go up there, or every year they play New England in general. So this is a must win game. On the Bengals, and Andy Dalton, 3 interceptions last week. Andy lost a fumble against Baltimore. What can Houston do against that redhead of his again?
Well, clearly the key to winning this game Thursday night is that T.J. Yates was released today as he was in the concussion protocol. So I think that, yeah, so clearly our path to victory is getting T.J. Yates signed for the game in uniform immediately. Clearly that needs to be the overarching strategy. To me, it goes back to the fundamentals and things that we've said already, that it's doing the fundamental things right that your quarterback can do well. So if the Bengals are going to get to the quarterback decently, they're okay, not great, they're fine. We need to get the ball out of the quarterback's hands. The game plan needs to reflect that. Defensively, we need to win the one-on-one battles. They have a decent offensive line. This is very mediocre. Cincinnati is a very mediocre team. Okay, there's not a lot of highlights there. So it's just doing those basic things and then making sure A.J. Green's ass is covered at all times because he's really the deal maker over there. I think Tyler Eifert survived the week. So he's another guy that you have to worry about on the defensive side of the ball. This is a game that theoretically we should win. It's going to be very interesting to see how it turns out. If Cincy curb stomps us like Jacksonville did, then I would just say that we're shooting towards 4-12 territory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing for this game is that Houston has to get pressure. They can blitz, they cannot blitz, it doesn't matter. But they have to get pressure on Dalton. And against that Baltimore game, it was what the Bengals tried to do is they every time they went to any sort of like 5-step drop or any longer developing passing play, Dalton got sacked. Terrell's game, Uga Hebe is one of the worst tackles in the game. He would be perfect for Houston. Suggs beat him, 3 or 4 times, easily. And he's starting left tackle over there. They put Andre Smith at right guard, but Jared Fisher and Eric Winston playing right tackle. They both are bad. Bodine's pretty good. Their left guard's pretty good. But overall, their offensive line it's not good. And Dalton's had problems with pass pressure. So you have to get pressure on Dalton. There's any sort of 5-step drop back, you have to hit him. There's no chance that you don't have – I mean, like, if you don't, then you have A.J. Green able to get open downfield. You have Brandon LaFell able to get up and downfield. You have John Ross able to get up and downfield. And Dalton's shown before that he can throw the ball, you know, downfield pretty well. That's what this game is all about, is stopping those five-step dropbacks with pressure. And the other thing that happened in that Baltimore game, too, is that because they were able to run those five-step drops, they instead ran those, like, screens and quick passes and those slants. And Baltimore just dropped their linebackers in coverage and played underneath zones. So they sat on those routes. They sat on their slants. They sat on their outside zones. They played a lot of cover, too. And they picked Dalton off three times and three. I think all three of those interceptions were in the red zone. So, you know, Houston should replicate the same thing. They should blitz to get pressure on him, make sure that's pressure on five-step dropbacks, and also do a lot of different things, kind of like what you saw last week with Vrabel, where run some zone blitzes, you know, drop Jadeveon Clowney in coverage, drop Merciless in coverage, hell, drop Wall in coverage, bring pressure from different situations so you can get guys who can sit underneath those slant routes and those quick dig routes and those sorts of things.
Yep, yep, I agree. It's yeah, I totally agree. I think that that's what needs to be done. I'm not so much for J.J. Watt being in coverage, but yeah. And, Clowney in coverage was kind of an LOL but over the weekend, but whatever.
Yeah, just maybe like four plays like that. You know, maybe he can copy his brother and get an interception this week. But I think there's a real good chance to stop him. And if you didn't know, like I love the condensed game so much. You can watch game 35. I went back and watched all of them from Sunday, and it was a lot of fun, especially after that really bad Texans game. But what Cincinnati did this year is that they lost starting offensive linemen. Rather than replace them with confident players, they doubled down, drafted John Ross, they signed Joe Mixon, and they got Andy Dalton even more weapons and said, hey, you know, be like Russell Wilson, learn how to play with an offensive line. He hasn't been able to. Is there any chance you think that the Texans can protect their against the Bengals front four?
No. I don't see it being much better than yes, because Jacksonville is supremely talented in that front seven, and Calais Campbell and Malik Jackson are just horrible matchups no matter who you are. So in that respect, yes. And I also just want to add, yeah, it's kind of funny that the Bengals have gone the Texans route on building up a team. Let's spend on a bunch of skill position guys instead of keeping the quarterback safe. But yeah, I do think that we will do better just kind of by default. Nobody's going to be as good as Jacksonville probably at getting to the quarterback that we're going to face this year. That's all there is to it.
Mm-hmm. So with all the injuries also, if you didn't know, Ryan Griffin's got a concussion. CJ Fedoris is plays on injured reserve, the concussion. Steven Anderson got the de facto Cecil Shorts the third, Arian Foster, fourth quarter, meaningless garbage time injury where he had concussion too. Brian Cushing has a concussion, and he probably won't play Thursday. And I think else has a concussion, and I'm blanking now, but five players do. And I can't remember the fifth one off the top of my head. But anyways, how is Houston going to move the ball offensively with just DeAndre Hopkins and Lamar Miller in this bad offensive line?
That's really the question, isn't it? I really think that if Deshaun Watson is going to play, I think the focus really needs to be on it, trying to do what you can, doing it backwards. You don't establish the run in the NFL. You establish the pass. It has been true like that for a good 20 years, so let's get it right. They're going to need to establish the run. They're going to need to make sure that they can do the quick passes to keep screens, bubble screens, get the ball to Watson's hand quickly, and to get the run game going and to not give up on it, most importantly. I just don't see how they're going to be successful if they have to push the ball down the field. It's the de facto problem when you've got Watson as your quarterback, and it's just going to be exacerbated because Cincinnati's going to stack the box. They're going to make Watson beat them, as they should. So the run and the passing game is going to need to work together, and I just think the passing game really needs to set the run game. I'm sorry, needs to set the lead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting too, the run game, especially if Mangs starts at right guard. If Mangs can block the second level, if Nick Morgan blocks the second level, and you can get some, you know, Lamar Miller the chance to cut back where you get the linebackers actually blocked, the run game may be actually able to do something. And this is the biggest game of Lamar Miller's career. Lamar Miller's going to have to create stuff out of nothing. He's going to have to break tackles. He's going to have to do a whole lot. Hopefully Deontay Foreman gets like 10 carries or 15 carries and Miller gets 20 carries. They have a game like that. And then you have Deshaun Watson throw a lot of play action. But it's such a weird game because the cover is just so bare. And it's, you know, week 2 and it's already a must.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to mention with that is that, again, it goes back to working on your player strengths. And I'd really like to see Lamar Miller being out in space. Just look at how Kareem Hunt was used by the Chiefs. I mean, that's just a perfect example. Use Lamar Miller like that, and good things are going to happen.
And even Tyler Irvin liked that a little bit too, because I thought he looked pretty good last Sunday, especially like I think he as a running back even, and so I those sorts of things, and they're going to turn their running backs into tight ends in a way. So what's your prediction? Who do you have winning this game?
Oh, God, I don't want to do this part. I've been so dreading this part of the show. I really enjoy these podcasts. I mean, I really, really freaking enjoy them. And so I've been thinking about this question all day because this game is going to be so freaking incredibly ugly. I mean, this game is going to be pathetic. You're talking about two offenses that can't block, can't keep their quarterbacks clean, can't create holes for the running backs against a pretty darn good defense in the Texans and a pretty average one for the Bengals. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. I'm just going to go out on a very, very short limb, and my guess is I'm going to say the Texans 10, Bengals 6 in another very high-scoring game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be kind of like if you – ever watched that Woodstock documentary of just hippies rolling around the mud and it's just a slop fest? That's what this game is going to be like. I really think the key is just getting to the pressure. And as J.J. Watt likes to say, we turn Andy Dalton from the red rifle into a Red Ryder BB gun. And that's what they're going to have to do to win this game for their side. And I think it goes back to Cincinnati too. I just think the close game luck isn't going to be there this year. And I think they're going to lose this game and they're going to lose a close one. And also after last week, just defensively with their inability to get pressure against the Jaguars offensive line that, you know, is slightly below average. You know, I have concerns about that too. And especially with AJ Green against either Kevin Johnson or Jonathan Joseph, you know, John Rosh and the issues with safety play and, you know, Mixon and man, even Bernard looked really good. Jeremy Hill looked really good on Sunday too. So I'm worried. And so I have Cincinnati winning 17-9.
Oh, and John Ross is going to dress. I did not realize that. I missed that. Okay, so John Ross is expected to dress for this game. And that's a big deal because he is just such a crazy, crazy mismatch on speed.
Yeah, I closed my eyes and I can already see Corey Moore chasing after him. All right, so we have a couple listener questions to get to real fast before we end tonight. The first one's from J.J. Watt's arm brace. We know Hopkins is the number one throwing option right now. Who is the number two throwing option right now? And I love this question so much.
I think the answer should be Lamar Miller. I think the answer really is nobody.
That's a good answer.
So I just, you know, we need to be doing more to get Lamar Miller in space. We need to be just even the small things, just getting out of the backfield on angle patterns and just doing things with them to match them up with a linebacker in space. The small things, it's so easy to do with the running back of Lamar Miller's caliber. So I don't think there's anybody because it has been CJF. He's out. Steven Anderson's out. You can't say it's Braxton Miller. You can't say it's Jalen Strong. You can't say it's anybody else. Matt?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to be on the running backs, too. I didn't think of that until you said it, but it has to be, you know, either Lamar Miller or Foreman or Irvin. I think it's been a lot of, like, those play-action, you know, those play-action passes where the back kind of seats out the backfield. I think you're going to see some of that. But, I think Hopkins is going to get, like, 20 targets this game. And also, you know, is Strong going to play this week? Another thing, too, Braxton Miller played, what, like 70 snaps on Sunday and was targeted once, and they have him on the outside. Play Braxton on the outside. He has to be there in the slot. He doesn't have the catch radius, the ability to high point the ball, to throw the ball to the outside to Manoah. And if you put him in the slot, maybe he can do something. But do you know if Jalen Strong's playing on Thursday?
I can't remember. I think he is dressing Thursday. I think it was a one-game suspension. I'm checking right now to verify. Yeah, he will suit up.
Okay, well, that maybe he can, like, catch one touchdown pass and get one target, catch one touchdown pass like he always does. This next question is from Brian Hoyer, Hall of Fame. What do you think the chances of O'Brien benching Watson for poor play are in the next 2 weeks? And I'll answer this one first. And Watson's for sure going to get benched. Like, we're 100% going to see Tom Savage play again. Watson's not going to end this year. It's going to be this constant rolling and tumbling between Savage and Watson. And I think a lot of it's also going to depend on the opponent that's going to be there. But this offensive line solidifies maybe some if Brown comes back. And then we take over maybe. And we kind of just, like, waste a lot of Deshaun Watson as Houston tries to maybe chase the playoffs. But I don't know. I think we're gonna see both quarterbacks come in off and on.
Yeah, I agree with that. This is Bill O'Brien's drama. This is what he does. I mean, if he's making a change after two quarters, then we're already in ridiculous speed.
Yeah, he should listen to Fergie more. You know, no more drama, like she always says. This next question is from Uprooted Texan. If you were to play Dr. Frankenstein or Dr. Moreau, choose your own science fiction adventure. What a swell guy he is. With all the offensive linemen, you think you'd be able to cobble up one competent offensive lineman from the linemen on the team not named Dwayne Brown or Nick Martin?
I like Manx at center. I don't like him as much at guard. I just don't think he has the strength of the size, really. But he's more than competent at center, more than competent. He's actually turned out to be quite good, happily. But no, because the number one thing you need to look for, and Matt, you can, well, correct me if I'm wrong, is you need to look at the feet. And none of these guys that we have on team have the feet to be a competent offensive lineman. They just don't have the quickness to do what needs to be done. Matt?
Yeah, I think you can. I think you say, like, Manx's feet and his ability to get to the second level, Sufio's strength, Manx's ability to punch the chest and hold on, Jeff Allen's belly, and then Breno Giacomini's mean attitude, his mean streak. And maybe then you got a confident offensive lineman. That reminds me of those Sports Illustrated for Kids where they would take, like, one different part of all these different players and create the perfect player. But this is just the exact opposite. It's kind of like Toy Story 1 with all the creepy toys, like the baby on the spider legs, you know?
Right, yeah.
All right, the last question is from UT as well. How surprised were you that Tyler Ervin was one of the more cromulent parts of the teams, such as it was on Sunday?
That's awesome. Cromulent. Well, he really embiggened my opinion of him on Sunday by looking competent for a change. So that was good. Again, you know, he's not trying to catch he's not Tyler Scissorhands. He's not trying to catch the ball with his face mask, et cetera, et cetera. He was competent at San Jose State, you know, so there is something to like there. Again, I'll go back to this is poor roster management because we already had Tyler Ervin on the team and his name was Kareem Hunt. Thanks, Chiefs. Appreciate that. We already had Akeem Hunt on the team. It's the same guy. I mean, have you ever seen the two guys seen them in the same room at the same time? No, they're the same dude. So that was just but he did look confident, and so that was great to see. And also, yeah. I just want to make a shout out to Jet Tweet for the Blutarski chugging the whiskey pick because that's just so totes perfect.
Yeah, it's been great for this episode. I drink alcohol during the week at all anymore because I'm an adult man now. But so we're metaphorically there in spirit with that gift that was posted. And I'm not going to answer his last question because he was talking about this jacket that he's never, ever going to win. So we'll ignore that
ever.
One too. Yeah, never,
ever.
Ever. Yeah.
And you neither.
We'll see. I don't know. I mean, I just want to win it just so I can send you all pictures of me not wearing a shirt with that jacket on, and I'm excited to do that one day. So, anyways, thanks for being on tonight, BFT. It was great. You know, I missed your voice. The listeners missed your voice. It was a lot of fun, as always. And we'll be back on next week, live, Tuesday, 7 p.m. Central. Maybe you'll be here. Maybe I can get somebody else on. We'll see what happens. But anyway, thank you for listening live, everyone. Thank you for all the questions. Thank you for tuning in. And bless all of you as you try to watch this game on Thursday night, because it's not going to be fun. And we're all going to die one day. We should all be using these 3 hours in a much better way than we're going to. But we're all going to be there in spirit watching this awful, truly awful game that's about to occur. So be strong, everybody. And we'll talk to you next Tuesday night live at 7 p.m. Central.
Won't be FD. Leave Bill O'Brien alone.
I thought it was pretty-